It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We do highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region. And please know, listeners, there's so much to celebrate about our region. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXEV, KRNW, hope you're enjoying the beginning of spring and the return of the songbirds. I'm pleased to welcome you to the March edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. In segment one, we feature Greg McDaniel, city manager here of the city of Maryville, Josh McKim of the Nottoway County Economic Development Corporation, and Jordan Swally of the Greater Maryville Chamber of Commerce. In segment two, we feature Dr. Theo Ross, professor of fine and performing arts at Northwest, and his son Justin. He's the head of development for Main Pictures in Los Angeles. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Greg McDaniel, Josh McKim, and Jordan Swally to All Things Northwest. Greg McDaniel serves as Maryville's city manager. He was born in Marshall, Missouri, graduated from Northwest Missouri State University, went on to get his master's from UMKC. He worked in the city of Independence for 7 years. He went on to Cherryvale, Kansas for 2.5 years, and he came back to Maryville in 2012. Greg lives in Maryville with his daughter Taylor, who is a 6-year-old and a first grader here at Horace Mann on the Northwest campus. Josh McKim serves as the director of Nottoway County Economic Development. He grew up here in Maryville. He graduated from Northwest and went on to Oklahoma State University to receive his master's. He's been in economic development for 11 years, worked all around across all levels. He's currently a member of the International Economic Development Council, the Missouri Economic Development Council, and the Northwest Roundtable of Economic Developers. Josh is the proud husband of Angie McKim, a special ed para, and the father of Grace, Claire, and Jonah. His family is actively involved in the college and the children's ministries at Laura Street Baptist Church in Maryville. Finally, Jordan Swally serves as the executive director of the Greater Maryville Chamber of Commerce. She is from Maryville and a 2012 graduate of Northwest Missouri State University. And she not only holds her Parks and Rec degree from the university, but she's held a variety of positions in municipal governments, tourism in Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, and Florida. She returned back here in 2014, and we're so pleased to have Jordan return back to Maryville. Greg, you're back home at Northwest, and Josh, you're coming home. So Jordan, Greg, and Josh, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to go. And bottom line is we're going to be talking about some things happening at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. But before we do, maybe we give each one of you a chance to talk about what's happening. I mean, we don't have enough time in the program probably to really look at all the great things happening in our local environment. But Jordan, we'll start with you. We'll go to Josh, then over to Greg. But Jordan, if you big picture elevator speech, you know, what's happening here in Greater Maryville Chamber of Commerce and all the good things happening?
Well, and the community, it's just really been a progressive nature. This past year, we had so many new buildings go up, businesses come to town, businesses relocate. I think this past year, we had 2 groundbreakings, which Pizza Ranch actually opened last month. And then we also had our groundbreaking for Wells Bank, which will be coming to town shortly. And then there's just more announcements that keep on coming about restaurants and businesses coming to town. So it's been really great so far.
Excellent. And Josh?
Well, John, I tell you, 2015 was an exciting year for us in economic development. We had somewhere around $75 million in just investment, both industrial and commercial investment. So we've got investment going on across the board, both at our industrial sites, but also with restaurants and some retail and some different service sectors as well. So it's very exciting. And that translated in somewhere around 213 jobs, just direct jobs, not adding any kind of multiplier or anything to it, to our region. So it's for us, it's been a really good year, very exciting year. I mean, in 2016, it's actually shaped up to look pretty good itself. We've had a couple announcements already this year, a couple new announcements on restaurants. So really, really excited about what 2016 has to offer.
And we should mention, Jordan, you know, from a chamber member perspective, and Josh from a Nottoway County Economic Development member perspective. I mean, so many good things. That $75 million mark, actually, Greg McDaniel and I sat down, did a little back of the napkin a few weeks ago, Greg, and we said it's well above that because of city, and if you count in the university, et cetera. Josh, we just had an economic impact study report done for Northwest. It was probably about 9 months ago. $617.5 million in added regional income equals about 9,400 jobs. So all good things happening within our region. Greg, we'll turn to you and kind of hear about the city.
Yeah, the city council continues a progressive nature this year in 2016. We're off to a fast start tackling a lot of projects that are in our Maryville Comprehensive Plan, our 20-year plan. Continue to check those off the list. Many of those actually at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, but we'll talk about those here in a little bit, I'm sure. But some other ones, some big ones the city council is on top of right now is improvements to South Main are going to be a hot topic item here for the next several months, as well as continuing our efforts to revitalize and redevelop our community through unsafe and dangerous housing removal. So continuing to create those vacant lots and redevelopment opportunities and get some communities and neighborhoods safer and back on the tax rolls.
Well, we're so thankful for your leadership, the three of you and what you do, the teammates around you, city council members, chamber members, those involved in NCED, Nottoway County Economic Development. The principal topic on today's program of All Things Northwest is really a look at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park and what's coming up on the April 5th ballot. We're just trying to inform voters of what's in front of them. So, Greg, maybe you can kind of summarize a couple of questions that are being asked.
Sure. The City Council has elected to place two questions on the April 5th ballot regarding Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The first question will be, shall the voters of Maryville continue to impose an existing half of 1% sales tax for the operations and maintenance support of Mazingo Lake Recreation Park? That question will simply go to continuing the park, continuing operations, maintenance, and improvements to the park park-wide. The second question that will be on the ballot will be, shall the City of Maryville increase its local park sales tax by an eighth of a cent for the construction of a conference center at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park?
Well, and let's kind of break those apart for our listeners and walk through them. So first of all, the existing half-cent sales tax renewal, like you said, the continuation of that. So maybe, Greg, for our listeners' sake, can you kind of backtrack the history of this sales tax and how much revenue it provides?
Sure. This sales tax was originally approved in 1997. It was renewed by the voters in 2006, and it currently will set the sunset on July 1st, 2017, unless renewed by the voters on April 5th. It's critical for the operations of the park. It generates about $950,000 in annual sales tax revenue, which is about one half of our annual operating budget. So it's critical for us to continue operations and maintenance park-wide.
So if we backtrack 10 years ago, over those 10 years, what are some of the major advancements that have taken place at Mazingo?
Significant accomplishments at Mazingo, worth noting over the last 10 years, from shoreline stabilization to RV park upgrades, beach, dock, and camping improvements, even to the website reservation system. We unleashed a new website, MazingoLake.com, that's fully reservable amenities online. It's really added to the benefit and continuing to grow Mazingo as a regional tourist destination. And then simply adoption of our 20-year master plan. So we have a vision moving forward. We have a 20-year vision that was adopted in 2014, and we're certainly off to accomplishing tasks in that plan.
Well, it's pretty obvious that over the last 10 years, the voters supported and the city acted, you know, and really put in some very visible improvements out at Mazingo. You referenced the 20-year master plan. So what are some things that voters could look at over the next 20 years as possibilities?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost is ongoing maintenance of our park. The park is maintained at a very high level for local citizens, and again, to encourage regional tourists to visit our amenities. But ongoing maintenance of the park, and with a lot of exciting opportunities between programming and other amenities such as the Watson 9. The Watson 9 is scheduled to open on May 14th of this year. Really will take junior golf and the golf experience at Mazingo to a whole nother level. Legendary golfer Tom Watson is behind the course, has sponsored the design of the course, and will be here for the groundbreaking. We will be required to maintain that course at a high level into the future, and we think that it provides significant opportunity for us for years to come.
And maintenance just doesn't come free, and so taking care of the things that we put into play is so very, very important.
Another big element of the sales tax revenue is it allows the City Council and the Mazingo Advisory Board to make sure that our user fees are extremely affordable for our local citizens. So some of the amenities at Mazingo, such as golf or camping, are able to maintain or operate at a low user fee so that everybody can enjoy Mazingo, or that, first and foremost, that many of the amenities can be enjoyed for free. Some of the area parks around the state, you have to pay an entry fee, and the sales tax revenue here helps us not have an entry fee and allows the majority of the public to use the park for free.
You know, Greg, I was talking to somebody recently, actually a group of individuals who were discussing, you know, some amenities down in southern Missouri, up in Iowa, Minnesota, and so on. And they were describing Mazingo as this area that you can see, you can envision Mazingo becoming a premier destination spot for all that it has today and what's been built up over the years, but also where it's headed. And so it's an exciting, exciting time for Mazingo.
Very exciting.
Well, Josh McKim, Nottoway County Economic Development, let's talk about the economic impact of Mazingo.
Well, it's actually twofold. In many ways, Mazingo is one of the best selling points we have in our region. As we go out to talk to businesses, whether that be commercial businesses, retail businesses, or if we're talking to major manufacturers.
You include Northwest Missouri State University
absolutely.
In that, too.
Absolutely.
These number of graduates two, so, here.
Okay. Now, but it is one of our bigger selling points in the area. Of course, Northwest being the number one. But, you know, a close second would be Mazingo. And what it provides as far as a quality of life for people. You know, it's really a kind of a rare jewel in that you have a developed end, which continues to develop and continues to offer services. But you also got what I would call an outdoorsman-friendly end. That's really got trails and systems, and it's got a lot of hunting opportunities, fishing opportunities. It's really a unique mixture, and until you've actually seen it, it's hard to describe to people, but we do our best. So as far as recruitment, that's one way that it definitely impacts economic development. You know, another way is just its direct impact. You know, it adds about $2.3 million of added income. But if you really just look at overall impact, we have somewhere around 267,000 people coming from outside our region to Mazingo per year. You know, total, it's going to be well over about 468,000 people total, including local people coming. If each one of those 267,000 people spend about $32-$33 a day when they come and visit, it's somewhere around $8.6 million of direct impact just from those sales. You add another $8 million of impact from some ancillary things, it's like $9.6 million just direct impact. But one number we don't often talk about is that 201,000 people that are local folks going out to Mazingo. You know, I think a fair argument can be made that that's also a way of retaining wealth in our community. So instead of people leaving the area to go do recreation, they're staying in our community. You know, we're just throwing out a number to try to put some kind of number to that. But if each one of those people are spending $20 here versus somewhere else, that's another $4-4.5 million of impact. So we're looking anywhere from $12-13 million of economic impact, direct economic impact, that Mazingo has today. You know, if you push that out over the 20-year period, whew, that's a lot of money. So it's a big deal.
Really is. And, you know, I think about friends and colleagues and recruits into Northwest Missouri State University, or even my family, or even myself, and there's so many multi-uses of Mazingo. It's incredible. But you're right, all those ancillary kinds of benefits, people driving in, driving through, stopping.
Yep.
Yeah, I understand. What about the tourism impact on economic development and Mazingo's reach?
Well, tourism is an important part of economic development. In Missouri, it's a $15.3 billion business. For any economic developer, an important segment of what they do has got to be around tourism. Mazingo makes it a little easier on us to do that. Obviously, it was built many years ago with some controversy, but there's not a lot of people to be against it now. And it's been impressive of what it's added to our community. And tourism definitely plays an important role in that. I mean, you just look at the numbers, 134 jobs attached to it. Now, that's direct and indirect jobs. But, again, that's a major employer in our community.
Well, it really is. And, Jordan, as we think about the community and the Greater Maryville Chamber of Commerce, you as the executive director, what impact does Mazingo have on our area businesses, area organizations?
Yeah, Mazingo affects many different businesses and organizations in our area. I mean, as Josh and Greg have both already mentioned, you know, the numbers that Josh just said, those are people coming into our community, 267,000 people coming into our area and spending their money, whether it be gas or going to a gift shop or going to Walmart, going grocery shopping, whichever it may be, that's money that they're bringing in and that we also are keeping into our area by the local residents utilizing Mazingo. It also affects the organizations. It gives them a place to go and host their barbecue competitions, their fishing tournaments, their golf tournaments. It gives them that area and space and amenities to be able to help them raise funds for their organization. And it's just played a huge role in our businesses and organizations community, even though, you know, people might not see it directly like that, but it plays a huge role.
Jordan, can you envision a time, you know, if the sales tax were to not pass, what would be the impact on the community as a whole?
The impact on the community as a whole, I mean, there would be many different areas, I would think, but the main one that I can think of is, like Josh mentioned, it's the quality of life that our people in our community already have. We're able to utilize the lake itself, whether it be to swim on the beach or go fishing, boating, whatever it may be, and sometimes you have to actually pay in other areas to be able to do those simple activities and take your family out there. We also have that great, well-maintained course out there that is just, if you were to compare it in beauty or difficulty to another course, you'd be paying double the price. But that sales tax helps keep it affordable for us, our citizens, and the economic development, people trying to locate and looking at our area to come in. I mean, they're looking to make sure that their employees would have a great quality of life as well. So it just plays a huge role with quality of life.
And so obviously ballot initiative one there in April and April 5th ballot, it's to provide a renewal of the existing half-cent sales tax. So it's really Greg McDaniel, city manager of Maryville. It's not adding any new taxes. It's just simply renewing one.
Yeah, renewing the support that this community's had for Mazingo for the last 20 years. Last July, we had a 20-year celebration to celebrate its history, and we look forward to another 20 years.
And I happened to be at that celebration of history, and it was unbelievable. The amount of people, and it had range of ages and range of activities. And we've all heard the stories, by the way, of the hunters that go out there, the fishing tournaments, the golfers in general. All of these build-ups and build-outs, the organizations that partake out there, the individuals that go out there, the tourists that just come in, so the impacts are pretty obvious. Interestingly enough, I also was talking to a few people statewide, nationally recently, and talking about that May 14th event, and they said they're going to be attending, and they're going to bring their VIPs and so on. But we anticipate a pretty big show on that with regard to perhaps even a national audience in some ways.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic for, not only the brand of Mazingo, but simply just continuing that quality of life and letting people know that we're going to have another world-class facility at Mazingo that's very unique for not only youth golf, but for all ages.
We've talked about it on this program, but the Tom Watson Youth Course, the Watson 9, you know, there's going to be three Watson Youth Courses in the world, right. One being in London, second in Los Angeles, and a third in Maryville, Missouri. So, right. A lot to celebrate. Well, let's move on then to the second tax issue that's on the ballot on April 5th. It's a 1/8 of 1% sales tax for the conference center. And again, Greg, for our listeners of All Things Northwest here on KXCB Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe, again, get our heads around what that really means.
Sure. This is a new tax. It will be a 1/8 of 1% local park sales tax on the ballot for April 5th for the purpose of constructing a $4 million conference center at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. This is an initiative that dates back to 2010 and has been a top priority of the Mazingo Advisory Board and City Council since then. So really, it's continuing the growth of Mazingo and doing that by increasing local park sales tax by 1/8 of 1%.
And what will that facility include then?
The facility will include seating for up to 500, potentially a third-party full-service restaurant, indoor cart storage, new pro shop, and simply other amenities to not only not only increase the playability of the course through tournaments, but also be able to host weddings, conferences, trainings, banquets, and any other events that we can pull to Mazingo.
I'm sure there are some naysayers out there that say we don't need a new sales tax, or hey, what about the existing facility? Why can't we use that, et cetera? Maybe talk about some of those issues.
Sure. The existing facility has some challenges. We're busting at the seams in our current facility with our tournaments and our events, and that's a good problem to have. It shows that, you know, Mazingo is headed in the right direction, and that is a challenge we face now before we even open the Watson 9. So we anticipate further growth. But, you know, as far as a new tax, a 1/8 of 1% equates to a penny on an $8 retail purchase. So if you buy a sub sandwich, a laundry detergent, anything that's $8, another penny would go towards the construction of the facility. And it's
for 5 years.
For 5 years. The actual sales tax is for 20, except for the fact that we need to keep in mind that there's an 1/8 of a cent on the books for the Maryville Community Center that retires in 2021. So another way of looking at this is it's a temporary 5-year increase from 8.475 to 8.6% for the local sales tax rate.
And how does that compare to other tax rates?
There are several communities throughout the state that are above 8.6 already: Macon, Harrisonville, Pleasant Hill, Excelsior Springs, Hannibal. There are some already other communities, so we're still in that comparable rate.
I know that some citizens have asked me, and I want to make sure I give the right answer, but how does the relationship of what's going on with the conference center, how does that relate to the Boulders Inn and Suites Hotel project?
Sure. For the last 4 years, the city of Maryville has been active in recruiting the Boulders Inn and Suites development from Iowa to build a 100% privately owned and operated hotel. And so this facility will complement that private development, and the private development will complement this facility. It will be completely separate. The hotel will be private, and the conference center will be public.
And Josh McKim, the projected usage of this facility.
Yeah, actually, when Greg and a few of us went to look at this facility, we actually looked at a model facility up in Denison. And so we've used a lot of their numbers to try to project, you know, what might be the usage for this. And Denison's very similar in size to Maryville. It's got some similarities to it. Doesn't have Mazingo. Frankly, it probably doesn't, in my opinion, have as good a golf course either. So there's a number of things that make us a little better situated. And, of course, Northwest.
Thank you.
You bet. Anyway, with that being said, they range about 250 events every year. That turns into about 20,000 total visitors, users of that facility. So as we've kind of tried to look at that and try to put some numbers to it, we estimate that that'll have a net impact of about $372,000 to the local economy. So there is definitely a positive impact to it. That's just with the economic impact numbers. Now, I would argue that there's probably a bigger impact as far as the how Mazingo is viewed. I think it could be a transformational project, one of those projects that moves you from a really great regional destination to something that could be very exciting for all of us.
Interestingly, I've been talking a lot about maturity life cycles recently on a range of topics. And as you think about Mazingo in its early years and through its first 10 years and into the the next decade. You can see where it's got its start, was just growing and adolescent and so on, then maturing and getting some loving, some care and so on. But then all of a sudden now you're seeing a Watson 9 and potentially these other facilities. Now all of a sudden you're seeing it coming into full bloom.
Well, I think you've got a point to the city leadership for a lot of that over the last few years, and really the looking at the rebranding of Mazingo, I think, was the start of really transforming it from a great community park to something much more special. And I think that goes to Greg and the leadership of the city council.
And that rebranding partnership, again, started with the Advanced Advertising Strategies class here at Northwest Missouri State University, and using those students to assist us in developing a product that would lead us to become a regional tourist destination. And we believe this project is an extension of those efforts. And I think, like you were talking about with life cycles, this project fits us, hits us at a time where we have a window of an opportunity to do this cost effectively and in a responsible manner. And so that's why we have chosen to put these questions on the ballot on April 5th.
And Jordan Swally, from a Maryville Chamber perspective, Greater Maryville Chamber perspective, what will the conference center itself, what would this provide the community that's currently missing?
Well, this facility, it wouldn't only provide the potential to have, corporate retreats. I mean, if we were to have a conference center out there, you're looking at the one place where they can stay, golf, utilize the Northwest Moera, fish, anything that would create a team building atmosphere for these corporate retreats. And that's one thing that I think could take Mazingo to a whole nother level and just bring in those people that might not normally come to Maryville, and then they'll come here and they'll say, oh my gosh, why haven't I been here before?
And as you've talked to chamber members, Jordan, do you get the sense that they see that this is necessary for our community at this time?
Most definitely. I've gotten a few numbers, and I know that this goes with the 20-year plan that the Mazingo Advisory Board has put together, along with the 20-year plan that the City of Maryville. And with those plans, they really ask for community input from the citizens, businesses, organizations, and from my numbers, 81% of these businesses and industries stated that we could use and they would use a facility like this if we were to build one. So I think it's something that our community desperately needs, and I think our city and city council and economic developers are going to make sure that that's the direction they want to take Mazingo in.
And Jordan, you mentioned something I think it's important to reiterate, is this is not, a scheme in Greg McDaniel's head or Josh McKim's or Jordan Swally's. It really comes from a city plan, 20-year plan, Mazingo plan. So I'm really driving this home, Greg, right?
Yeah, this project is one of the top priorities in the Maryville Comprehensive Plan and the Mazingo 20-year plan. It was also confirmed through two third-party independent research studies that our market, our Maryville market, could support not only another lodging facility but a meeting space up to 5,500 square feet, which is the ballpark that we're in with this proposed conference center.
Before we close, let me ask Greg, if people need more information, what should they do?
Sure. Please see us at our website at mazingolake.com/the next 20. That's the next 20 for more information on the April 5th vote.
That's great. Well, we thank Josh McKim, Nottoway County Economic Development, Greg McDaniel, City of Maryville, and Jordan Swally, the Greater Maryville Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for joining All Things Northwest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Northwest Missouri State University's Dr. Theo Ross, Professor of Fine and Performing Arts at Northwest, and his son Justin, Head of Development for Main Pictures in Los Angeles. It's going to be a great segment talking about father and son and their experiences here at Northwest. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at 660-582-5222.
Welcome back to the March edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. I am so pleased right now and honored to bring to All Things Northwest Dr. Theo Ross and Justin Ross. Dr. Theo Ross is in his 38th year as a professor at Northwest Missouri State University. He teaches in the Fine Arts and Performing Arts Department, has served in the Communication, Theater, and Languages Department since 1978. He served as a professor and a department chair twice, associate and interim dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, taught all kinds of courses, provide all kinds of research and service and scholarly activity, multiple university communities, awards, recognition, who's who in American colleges and universities, national finalist for the American Council on Education Fellows Program, citation from the National Alliance for Arts Education, and it goes on from there. He, by the way, was the first recipient of Alpha Psi Omega's Gold Star Award, as well as many other awards. Theo received his undergraduate degree from the University of Pennsylvania Clarion, his master's from Bradley University, and another from Bradley, a PhD from the University of Missouri Columbia. Having come here as a young faculty member in 1986, I think it was, when I got on campus, one of the first people I got to know is Dr. Theo Ross, and it's just a pleasure to welcome you to the program, Theo.
Well, thank you, John. That introduction wore me out. I didn't realize I had done so much.
Well, what's beautiful is I get to introduce your son, and interestingly enough, I could wear out listeners again on that one, too, because T. Justin Ross hails from Maryville, as you might imagine. He grew up here watching his dad direct plays, watching his mom write plays, and so on. Justin attended Northwest Missouri State University. He received his bachelor's degree in 2003 in television production, so we're here in the confines of Wells Hall, and Justin knows those confines quite well. While at Northwest, Justin wrote, produced, directed several independent films. After graduation, Justin joined the AmeriCorps and was stationed at a nonprofit civic engagement initiative in Kansas City, where he spent 2 years working with inner-city youth. He then went on to Florida State University, the Graduate Film Conservatory, and he wrote, directed, and produced several award-winning short films there. Went on to receive his Master's in Fine Arts in Motion Picture Production from FSU and moved on to Los Angeles to enter the entertainment industry. Listeners, I think it's important you know that Justin has worked virtually every filmmaking discipline over the past 8 years. He now primarily works as a producer of narrative motion pictures, most recently serving as the associate producer on Lionsgate Entertainment's Texas Chainsaw 3D. He's the head of development for Mainline Pictures in Los Angeles, and he's also serving a diverse slate of independent feature films. But alongside his professional work, he currently serves as a professor practitioner right here at Northwest Missouri State University, his alma mater, where he takes great pride in helping the filmmakers of tomorrow discover their own creative voices. Wow. Theo, you got a great introduction. Justin, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
Well, it's pretty obvious. Dr. Theo Ross, Justin Ross, you guys bring it. You bring it professionally, you bring it personally, but bottom line is you're committed. You're committed to development and really Northwest students and so much more. Theo, I want to start with you. 38 years, you've seen so much change. Maybe we should take a quick retrospective, and I don't even know if you can do it quick, but as you think about teaching back then versus teaching today, students, the university, the community, all that goes with it, what have you seen that's so dramatic in change and maybe not so dramatic?
Oh, the technology probably is the greatest change. Of course, when I came, it was all paper and pencil and keeping grades on a blue book and receiving papers, grading those with a red pen and handing them back. And now there's very little actual paper anymore. It's almost all electronic, digital. So there's an efficiency there. There's a new dimension to that. And, of course, the instructional modalities are quite different in the classroom as well. And all of that is, I think, certainly to the good, because it doesn't change the inherent principles of good education, which is still student engagement, which is, I'm kind of a sophist, so I like to engage in question, answer, stimulate discussion. You can do that now, either face-to-face, or you have the opportunity to do that at distance, all electronically, as I'm sure we'll talk with Justin about.
We will, and as you think, Theo, back to some significant milestones or memories here at Northwest, what are some that come to mind? I know people ask you that question probably a lot, but for our listeners' sake of all things Northwest, what are some things that come to mind over the last 38 years?
Well, of course, the big event just about 38 years ago was the administration building fire. That's a significant part of Northwest's history, and I was involved with that, or I was there at the time, and so that's etched in my memory, of course. And I think not just because of the physical changes that it brought about with the building of several facilities and changing the orientation, but it gave, in a strange way, the university, I think, a new kind of energy or a different sort of energy. Faculty pulled together and students were looking for program innovations, and there was an aliveness that came out of that thanks to the leadership at the time and to the state legislature.
Well, and if I recall correctly, Theo, you were working on your dissertation at the time, and maybe share that story with our listeners.
No, that's true. That's an oldie but a goodie. I was just about to complete my dissertation. It was
before computers.
Before computers, as a matter of fact, yes, typing it.
Had to chisel that in stone.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
The first draft of it.
But the loving son said.
So we were. I was working on that in the during the summer when the fire occurred. It was fortunately, I had taken it home that evening to work on at home. So a draft of it was at home with me. But all of my notes, my research materials, and everything else, original documents, and some things that I had gathered over quite a few years, were all in the office, and they were lost. But, you know, I was able to go back and redirect a little bit. My committee was very supportive of that. The university was terrifically supportive. And I think, you know, looking back, I talked about camaraderie and the leadership and the faculty pulling together. That's one of the things, John, that probably convinced me to stay here. So early in my career, the kind of support that the university gave me and encouragement to continue to work gave me the opportunity to finish that, and I said, well, if they do that for me, I owe them big.
And I should say, I'm going to take this moment right now, but I need to thank you, because over the years, as I was a faculty member here at Northwest, you were always providing encouragement and support to me. So what people did for you, you did for others, and I thank you very much for that. So Theo, as you think about Justin growing up, and I'm going to come back and talk about your profession and our students and so on, but let's kind of transition to Justin just for a minute. You know, so he grew up here in Maryville. He grew up on campus. He grew up watching you direct and so on. What are some of your favorite memories of that father-son interaction and watching Justin grow up?
Oh, that's not all that hard to talk about. I have a lot of very fond memories. Justin was a campus rat, you could say. He probably still knows parts of this campus that no other people have seen. Because he, when I was directing, would spend time with me up at the theater. He always had campus or theater student babysitters. And they would walk him back and forth to campus. When he got a little bit older, he would bring the dog, Charlie, onto campus and chase ground squirrels and that sort of thing. But he was able to, while attending Horace Mann and staying on campus, he was able to, I think, experience a lot of the, have a lot of opportunities and experiences that so many other kids don't have, so many other families don't have that chance to expose their children to this. So my memories of him were more observing him as he interacted and as he attended these events and thinking how fortunate he is to be able to have these experiences.
And then fast forward, Theo, then you see him go through a
television production program and graduate from Northwest and then go on from there. What was that like for you as a faculty member and as a father, seeing him develop and grow and now into, you know, being just an unbelievable professional out in Los Angeles?
Well, it's exciting. You know, a father's greatest wish is that a son might follow in his footsteps. But also you want to make sure that or you hope that the son can follow his own dreams. Justin's had the chance to do both. He is following his professional dream as a filmmaker now, but also by coming back and doing some professional teaching here, being a professor practitioner, he's also following in my footsteps a bit. So it's the best of both worlds. You can't ask for any more than that.
Well, I was so pleased when Justin first joined us a couple of years back. We had an opening meeting. I saw you guys in the lobby of the Houston Center for the Performing Arts. I was able to snap a picture of you. I still need to send it off to you guys. But, you know, bottom line is, Justin, you obviously know Maryville. You know Northwest Missouri State University. For our listeners' sake of all things Northwest, Justin, maybe you can kind of talk about your current professional role so they understand what you do and how you do it.
Sure. So it's rather interesting. It's a new initiative at Northwest, and the idea was first proposed by Dr. Mote. I heard him speak of the concept of a professor practitioner last fall when I was back to teach this past semester as well. And it's simply the idea is to have an individual who's a working professional, sometimes in a relatively competitive industry, and then have that person kind of keep one foot in the professional arena, one foot in the academic arena to kind of bridge that gap for our students and provide hopefully some relevant current information about those career paths and, you know, kind of, again, keep the information fresh that we're able to provide to our students, in at least in our department.
And so do you, as a professor practitioner, do you interact with our students in an ongoing format, in which way, how often, et cetera?
Sure. So the scenario which I'm working with this semester, I'm very excited about, is something where I spend, again, it ends up being about half the time in the classroom on campus, and then half the time in my my work out here in Los Angeles. So I like to get the students involved personally right off the bat for about 5 weeks, and then I come back to Los Angeles for about another 5 weeks and Skype in while I'm here in town with industry professionals who are working in the fields that we're discussing in class. And say if we're talking about production design, I'll interview a production designer and allow the students to ask questions to them, or cinematography or directing, writing, et cetera. And I think that that's kind of a pretty unique opportunity that allows us to kind of bridge the gap from not only academic to professional, but also in an area such as Northwest's location in rural America. It's not often that our students have access to working professionals and in such careers. So I think I'm really excited about that middle section, which I'm doing right now, and then I'll be coming back at the end for about 3 weeks to wrap up personally and oversee the delivery of their student films that they're doing. So just kind of start off in Northwest, work remotely, Skype in here in Los Angeles with professionals, and come back to end the classes at Northwest as well.
So we talk about profession-based education here at Northwest, and you're living that for our students, obviously, by that bookend, if you will, starting it, ending it, but then going back out to L.A. and then Skyping in. So our listeners might think about online education where students are going online. It's actually, in this case, the faculty members going online, Skyping back here for our students. Justin, talk about Mainline Pictures and what you do there in your other life here.
Basically, as a motion picture producer, you have to keep a lot of irons in the fire. There's a lot of projects that I have that are in various stages of development and pre-production. I've got a psychological thriller feature, a sports movie, a children's movie, television show, etc. All those things, you kind of ferry through pre-production. You develop them with creatively and then through professional attachments of different talent, and then you go through production into post-production. And at Mainline Pictures, I'm the head of the development process, which basically means I read a lot of scripts, and I take the scripts that we have, and I work to make them better. And I find material that we can turn into movies or television shows, such as books, personal stories for biopics, et cetera. And it's a rewarding process. It's a tedious process, but it's something that I enjoy a great deal.
And so can you talk about a couple of the projects that you're working on currently, perhaps?
Yeah, sure. I think the number one project that kind of has my attention is a pet project of mine I've been working on for a good deal of time with a good friend of mine. It's a horror anthology show similar to Tales from the Crypt, where it's these morality tales where we have characters that are forced to make a moral choice, and those that make a bad choice get their comeuppance. And it's a fun kind of campy project which has some really great design elements, and I think it's something that I see a strong potential for a pretty good television show out of it. So currently we're working on taking that to the next level. We just made a short film which is on the film festival circuit right now and doing very well and getting a lot of attention around town. So currently taking meetings and trying to ferry that to the next step, and I'm pretty optimistic about where it's going.
And Theo, I have to contrast all of that back to kind of Maryville, Northwest Missouri State University. Some of the projects that you've helped oversee this past academic year and currently, maybe talk about a couple that you've been involved with.
Sure. We have a wide selection of productions. I'm very pleased with the way the student theater productions have taken off in our studio and our black box venues. We're currently working on a show that opens very soon called a Variation on Alice in Wonderland, and it's a different sort of a play that we'll be putting on in our studio theater. It's a student production, brand new studio theater. Then our main stage is going to feature Legally Blonde in April. That's the big and very popular musical right now. The theater department is doing that in combination with the music program. And so we're keeping people busy, doing lots of different things, and hopefully next year we'll be able to continue to do even more.
Well, I'm interested, Dr. Theo Ross and Justin Ross, right here on All Things Northwest. I'm interested in hearing from you gentlemen about theater, speech, film, production in general. At an institution like Northwest Missouri State, why should a student come here? What makes it so special at a place like this? So, Justin, we'll start with you, and then we'll kind of come back to your dad on that. So, Justin?
Well, speaking to my specific discipline, which is narrative creative production, storytelling, if you will, as you know, Northwest isn't a film school. It doesn't have a film discipline, so to speak, and I knew that whenever I decided to go there a long, long time ago. But what it does have is something that a lot of film schools lack, and I think is a vital ingredient when you're attempting to grow as a filmmaker, and that is support and access not only to your faculty who can guide you along the way, but to equipment and the ability to be able to, as a freshman at Northwest, just jump right in your first year, sometimes even your first semester, check out gear for free, wonderful gear, and be able to go into the field and create your own stories from day one. That's something that film schools just cannot allow. Specifically, they have limitations on equipment, and the demand is so high that in a lot of institutions, you're not able to get your hands on the equipment and start doing the craft until you're an upperclassman. And it's been my experience as a student and now as a professional and a professional that oftentimes hires students fresh out of school, that the best individuals are the ones that have had a lot of opportunity to grow and learn and make the mistakes ahead of time. And so having access to equipment at Northwest is something that is just, I literally can't understate how important that is for our students and how that puts us, in my opinion, ahead of many film programs that are out there.
Thank you, Justin. And Theo, as you think about, you know, why Northwest and what sets it apart?
Similar to that, John, the access and opportunities that students have at Northwest or a school like ours, you go to a larger institution and a theater major won't even get on stage until they're a junior or senior. You're competing with upperclassmen. You're competing with graduate students. And so there might be a large number of productions going on, but you don't have a chance to actually participate. And if you're not doing it, you know, just watching and observing, if it's all theoretical and classroom-based, you don't have the opportunity to put into practice those skills that we're trying to teach you. And so that's always been an advantage that Northwest has, one of the reasons we do the large number of productions that we do, one of the reasons we have the studio, the student series that we have, one of the reasons that we have student leaders in all of our production positions. And that's been to our great benefit in the past. It really helps our students when they go to get a job and someone sees that they've actually done so many things and they've taken leadership positions and they not just know how it works, but they've actually done the work themselves. Great advantage.
What I really enjoy is both of you are talking about our profession-based experiences, that it's more than hands-on, but it's allowing you to grow and adapt and make mistakes and so on, but it's also connectedness to the industry. And there's a lot of writing right now about the skills gap in America, but I think this profession-based that Northwest Missouri State University offers is huge for our students. But it's because of faculty like Dr. Theo Ross and certainly a professor practitioner like Justin Ross. I'm curious, you gentlemen, you've worked together on campus now for a time period. Obviously, Justin's joining us from Los Angeles, but we'll be coming back to the campus, as he had mentioned. But, you know, did you guys hang out together, have any coffee at all, and what'd you learn from each other?
We do. It's interesting. We interact quite a bit now. Because of Justin's irregular schedule or because he's not here full-time, he's actually back at home living with us. And so we have a lot of opportunities, although we're both busy, to interact. And we do have a number of conversations relative to what's happening in the classroom as well as outside. And it's interesting, I think, when we are able to chat about how things work, the experience that I have with classroom management, with pedagogical approaches and that sort of thing is what I can bring to the table. And then Justin is always amazing me with some new technique that incorporates an electronic device of some sort. And I have to tell you, I have my technique, my experience has grown so much. Just watching him work and hearing the different things that he's trying in the classroom, that it really is a blending of both the old and the new, as it were, good old standards with the new techniques.
And Justin?
Speaking on behalf of the new, I think obviously we're the younger generation's wired a little bit differently. We're more inclined to incorporate different technological techniques into the classroom. But I think a good example of when I realize that I really still have a lot to learn, and sometimes the old school way is rather a lot more efficient, is I've got an iPad Pro that I'm able to, get students' scripts from and paperwork, and I'm able to mark up directly on it and then email it back in this sort of live process, which I thought was a great idea and a way to kind of, work remotely. But I've been trying to turn my father onto it and how he grades. And it's rather interesting because he's pointed out a few deficiencies where the digital era just isn't able to compete. Like if you want to flip back and forth from sheet to sheet on a hard copy, you just can't really seem to do that efficiently. So it's something where I end up, I think, spending a lot more time with a gadget. I think the technique has been refined to such a point for some of the old school practitioners that there's still some stuff that us new guys can learn and maybe take a step back and stick with what works.
Well, the synergy between the two of you and the respect is very obvious. I have to, before we close, I need to ask both of you how you would describe Northwest Missouri State University. Justin, obviously, you know, you worked a local radio station, you were a student ambassador on campus and involved in so many organizations, et cetera. But if you were asked to describe Northwest Missouri State University, how would you do that?
In a word, home. I think that That meaning is certainly different for every individual, but one of the things that makes Northwest great is that while I was a local resident and grew up in, you know, Maryville and had a father as a faculty member, I think that type of feeling, that type of community and family is extended to anyone, no matter if you are a townie or or someone from multiple states away. And I think that's one of the things that makes Northwest just so special. So, yeah, I would choose home.
And Theo, 38 years teaching, research, scholarly activities, service.
Well, Northwest was the sort of school that I was looking for and hoped that I might end my career in when I left my graduate program. I was looking for a school of about this size with this kind of emphasis, these kinds of students, and I was just fortunate to be able to begin in the sort of place that I wanted to end up. So it certainly has been home to me in more than one or two ways. I think home is a pretty apt description. There's a saying that home is where when you have to go there, they have to take you in. And that's the way Northwest feels, I think, to me and to my students, because you observe when they do, and they do frequently, come back to share their experiences, to mentor the new students, to serve on boards and just hang out. When that happens, you know that they're coming home, and that's a good feeling.
Well, so very well said. We're so thankful for your service, Theo. And Justin, I'm going to give you the last word here and ask you to describe your dad's legacy.
God, that's a pretty powerful question for me to answer. I think, you know, there are storied faculty members on every college campus, and I think students and younger faculty look to them for guidance, to kind of be the touchstone of the institution, so to speak. And I think for me and many others, my dad has become that one of those individuals. And there are a few on campus now, but I find as I am, you know, part of kind of the younger generation, a sort of not only nostalgia, but a desire to find and seek out more individuals like him to be able to guide us in the future. And I worry that when they leave, it's something where, you know, we'll lose a part of Northwest's not only identity, but a lot of the things that make it great. So I'm proud to have called him, you know, a colleague for the past few semesters, and I'm certainly proud to have learned a great deal from watching him and hopefully incorporating his techniques into some of mine. But I think I'm even more proud to have seen the impact he's had on so many people. Whether it's students, faculty, staff, anyone that's a part of the Northwest family, I think it brings me great pride to be able to have seen such a positive legacy that he's created over the years at Northwest.
Well, that's so well said. That's Justin Ross, professor practitioner here at the university, but also obviously with Mainline Pictures out in Los Angeles, and Dr. Theo Ross, faculty member here at Northwest.
Thank you for inviting us, John. Pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, City of Maryville and Nottoway County leaders Greg McDaniel, Josh McKim, and Jordan Swally, and Northwest Missouri State University's Dr. Theo Ross and Justin Ross. Thanks, too, to our producer, Brandon Travis. You know him as B-Trav. He's a student here at Northwest, along with KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. Friends, take good care, treat each other well, provide good works for others, and please keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Chasinski, and thanks for your support of All Things Northwest. Northwest Missouri State University, KXCV KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at 660-582-5222. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest Professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is produced by broadcast production major Brandon Travis. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.